I was on a plane recently, and you know what? When on the back of the seats, they have the little screen that shows this ginormous plane flying over the country. It's situated kind of true north, so I realized, because I really paid attention this time, how far north places like Maine and New Hampshire and Seattle. And even on the other coast, you're absolutely right. Minnesota's incredibly north, and Wisconsin and whatnot. I often think here in Toronto that like we're truly in the Great White North, but as it turns out, no. You guys right now are colder than us, so deal with it. Mind you, you're a lot further south than us.
I saw this movie. This is such a fun movie. It's called Slash Back, and it's this indie film, horror film. Well, it's more of like an action film about these young girls who have to kill aliens who are kind of impersonating people, sort of like a la Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But it takes place up in Nunavut, and it's up in way northern Canada, and apparently it's shot with all, they're not really actors, they're like the real people, and it takes place in this small little hamlet, they call it, a little town that is completely isolated. You can't even drive to it. You have to take a boat to get to it, and it's one of these that is shut off from like the rest of the world for parts of the year because there's no access. It was pretty cool.
I'm just reading the Wikipedia page. They say a lot of the footage was taken also from Baffin Island, which I know probably means nothing to most of the people listening, but anybody from Canada knows that it's this massive piece of land, almost like the size of like Greenland. But because in Canada, I don't remember the stat, but I think it's about like 5% of the population lives, or sorry, yeah, 95% of the population lives in 5% of the overall like land available and whatnot. So when you get up to like the really northern bits, even us Canadians are willing to like tap out of like having any kind of understanding of what it's like. It's a 2022 Canadian Inuit science fiction film.
It's really fun. It's really crazy. God. There's this bunch of like young teen girls kicking ass, and it's just silly fun. Highly recommend that movie.
And it won a bunch of awards. I can come to the table today and say, I watched a movie. Last night, I watched a movie in a movie theater. And it was the first time for quite a while I have been to a movie theater. And I watched the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Oh, yeah. So I hear that's getting pretty good reviews.
It was a very fun movie. The most interesting aspect is I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy 1 or 2.
So oh, really?
I've seen like enough clips, and I know I mean, obviously it's big enough to like know the lore in each of the characters loosely, but I didn't know a lot of the backstory and whatnot. However, they do a very good job, as they do in a lot of these types of movies, where they can bring you up to speed and build the characters through the good dialogue. Had amazing music. Again, made the observation that 99% of movies these days use music which is at least 25 to 30 years old. Like the majority of music that gets crowds a pumping and whatnot really seems to, we were surprised because they played a preview for the new, I don't know, random Marvel movie, whatever, it was Transformers movie or something like that. Actually, it was called The Event. No, anyways, I don't know is the larger point. But they used a Beastie Boys song from the mid-80s. And it's just funny how like with all of the current music and all of the exposure that like getting a soundtrack or whatnot in a movie would get you, why they always just go with like these long, they had the Rolling Stones in this one. And it's just
the whole conceit of Guardians of the Galaxy is that he's from the past, and so he brings like these mixtapes of his older, that old classic rock, I guess.
And when I watched the Mario Brothers movie, it was the same thing. A lot of and I get that as well. That's calling back to people from the 80s and 90s. So you're probably going to include music in that. However, all of the previews and all of the trailers were featuring, again, just like this older music, whether it be a Guardians of the Galaxy. And I found it kind of an interesting observation.
I wonder how many younger people are going to the movies anymore. I mean, it just seems like, I wonder, And this is sort of, I fear that the days of the cinema are going to disappear, but it's starting to feel like this is a thing that older people do, go to the movies.
And it's really expensive.
It is. And see, like Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think I would want to see that at the cinema just because it's just too long. Isn't that like a two and a half hour?
2.5 hours.
Yeah, see, stop that shit. I gotta sit down. I want to be able to pause and go to the bathroom.
And that's another, throw an intermission in. Like, remember an intermission? Just 10 minutes in the middle of it. But I was very surprised at that. It was great storytelling and visually it was wonderful.
Yeah, those are fun. Out of all of the Marvel movies, that's kind of the one that I can watch. The rest of them don't do much for me.
So the thing was, the ticket price, the base ticket price is expensive enough. And then obviously concession. They had this weird concession stand sign where the biggest thing was literally the picture, obviously, of like, hey, get a candy, you get a pop, and you get a popcorn. And it was like, and they would say in big letters all of the things, and then in the smallest type possible. It wasn't like, oh, this combo is $9.99, this combo is $19.99. This combo was $15.05. The next combo was $38.04. Like the most random numbers possible. And that was incredibly small font. Anyways, and then when we get into the movie theater, we realized that the particular movie that we were watching had these upgraded seats, which vibrate and shake about. And
wow, there you go.
Yeah, and that's just another way to get more money out of us.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of the theaters are trying to do a lot of that to get people back to the theaters. I mean, especially after the last few years has been a rough time. But, you know, we used to see movies every Friday night. That was our kind of ritual. And there would be weeks where there wasn't really anything great playing, but we would still go out and find something to watch. It was a lot of fun. And ever since the pandemic, we just haven't been doing that.
I remember being able to go out and even just be around a movie theater or like the parking lot or whatnot. And when a movie would let out, it would be like, oh man, there's going to be traffic.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when a sporting event would get
it.
Now I went to a very late show last night. It was like a 9:30 show or something like that. But there was legit, I mean, this was a very new movie as far as I know. There was like four people in the theater aside from
it's
us.
Kind of
so
crazy.
I don't know if people are... Are they? I mean, that's what's got me so excited about VidCon and stuff like that, because we're getting back to that. And I actually just came back from my first YouTube event, like in-person YouTube event at a Google office.
Oh,
just
really?
Yesterday, yeah.
What's that all about?
It was a shorts workshop.
Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm. They asked me if I wanted to do that, like a virtual visit or shorts workshop, but I didn't do it.
You know what? It was probably this one then, Steve. You could have seen the same one that I was in person for. Yes, they were holding it in Toronto, if it was the same one. It was run by our partner managers and whatnot, and they gave a whole bunch of great tips and tricks and whatnot.
Did you get any free food?
Of course, because the best thing about a Google event is the delicious food that they have. And I like walked and grabbed everybody's swag because they gave like little notepads and stuff and stickers. And who doesn't like a YouTube sticker
or
a
YouTube plastered pen? On my shop.
You know what? It's not even me. It's just usually like my mother-in-law has just some kids who just love anything with a YouTube logo on it. So I went with a purse and I started like...
Have you ever been to the YouTube? Was that I guess there's a Toronto YouTube headquarters or something. Have you ever been to the main one in San Bruno?
I have. And I've been to the one in New York City, which is also a very cool one. And we used to have a YouTube space in Toronto for a few years back when that was kind of a thing. I don't know if they still have the spaces or not.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
But they closed it here, and everything's done through the Google office, and the Google office is a substantial office here, so it's not a problem. They can assimilate it. But yeah, we get brought down to the core of Toronto, and we sat, and they had a little panel of three different creators, all of them really large, all of them post COVID channels, which is very interesting. And I actually realized there was probably maybe about 40 people who were invited to this in person. And out of all of the creators that were there, the vast majority of them were post COVID channels.
Shorts creators. Yeah.
And the three panelists barely dabbled in full length video or were like experimenting, because I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do in, you know, in the regular video kind of scape, and what, like, what my audience is going to want. It was absolutely fascinating. There were very young people, all of the people who were on the panel. However, in the audience, there was an interesting, really, really dynamic mix of creators who were there, all age ranges and whatnot. I kind of gravitated towards the older folk, the, and whatnot, but it was fascinating to hear these younger, newer channels who have crazy, like 8 million, 9 million subscribers. There was
In just a couple of years because of shorts.
Actually, one, because of a short that was released last month that got 70 million views, that generated 1.8 million subscribers for that particular channel.
And
that
probably channel generated like $30 for that creator.
Yeah. Well, in Canada, we get $0. And that was, that. I mean, that's part of the thing. They're obviously, they've always been working on that. And we certainly all expect that. They're working on even a lot more than that, actually. They're really planning on incorporating shorts in a much more kind of interesting way moving forward. But it was just really interesting to see creators and whatnot, and the cadence at which they produce content, because they went up and they introduced themselves, and then there were people were asking questions, and one of the questions was like, how many shorts do you upload every day? And the one person was like, oh, like 2 to 3, and I'm always filming, I'm always filming. And then the other person was like, well, we have a, you know, production team and editors and whatever, so we always constantly need, so we're putting up this amount of shorts, this amount of full length content, and then we stream, and then we do this. And then there was the prank channel, who literally was like, yeah, we put up 4 to 5, sometimes even more, like 6-7 videos a day. And their secrets to success was A, shoot fresh content, always be shooting, always thinking of the next idea, put it up. If it doesn't work that first time, you know, try the same idea again, you know, what, edit it slightly, mm-hmm. try a jump cut here. And they were speaking, the amount of hustle and work, they should be incredibly proud of all of the success that they had, but the words and the language that they were using of like being on vacation and working from, you know, I set hours when I'm on vacation because I know I'm on vacation. So I set the morning to do that. And my, you know, and my wife was like, oh, hey, are we going to, and I'm like, hashtag hustle. And it was this interesting kind of like balance between like, hey, we all know in order to kind of get that, you need to like just constantly be feeding the system. But at the same time, they were using kind of examples of people who kind of have unhealthy right. content production habits as like examples. And I get the point, like in shorts, like they said, it's like 50 billion views a day, or it's unheard of, the shorts content and like how it's being consumed and whatnot and how they want to control it, but they have no idea, I guess, kind of the format in which it's created and how to like control the healthiness of that, if that makes sense.
So yeah, I've been thinking about shorts lately, and it was actually one of the things I meant to bring up today was kind of my thoughts on shorts as it stands now, because I feel like every month or so, my feelings towards shorts change. It's constantly evolving as YouTube does. Everything changes and I try to stay on top of it. But I'm at the point now where I sort of regret making the shorts that I did, at least on my main channel, because I think it had sort of a detrimental overall effect to the channel. I really do think that too many people came on board just to watch shorts. And you could see this in any channel. As soon as they start posting shorts, subscribers go up and the numbers all go up. But those people aren't watching anything else. And when your channel is focused on longer format videos, I really think that that's probably not the best solution, at least at this date right now. I think that if I hadn't posted any channels at this point, or hadn't posted any shorts at this point on my channel, I don't think I would start.
You had the misfortune of starting so early. Like you were like,
yeah, well,
edge.
And also the shorts got so many more views back then, at least the ones I posted. I could post a short and it was just crazy numbers of views. But now I look at channels that do shorts, except for the few exceptions who that's all they do is post shorts. Most people aren't getting huge views on their shorts anymore.
not to the same extent, it seems.
It certainly not the way seems it was like 3 years ago now.
But it's interesting because it does seem like a still a very valid form of content for a content creator to have in like their toolbox. But it really does seem to be like there's a challenge in finding out like what should a short be. You took a very logical approach to it. You're like, I'm going to try to figure out if there's like a type of content or something that like would resonate. And I just do that. And then you would write them to be a certain length. And then you tried to kind of create a story arc within a short. And one of the things that they talked about at this workshop, like slapped my head as soon as I, you know, in your analytics where you see the little spikes,
right?
It's like, oh, hey, there was this one hot minute in the video and everybody kind of like went back to watch it 100 times. They're like, take those little spikes and make them shorts.
That is a moment.
Oh,
wow.
Man.
Yeah.
So
those are the moments where I just go topless for a second or so, show some cleavage, you know.
And they did talk about like, should you open up a second channel? Does it affect your long form content?
YouTube will say no.
Well, they assuredly say no now, and I'm sure that's true. I'm sure that's not saying that, but I guess my earlier point was like, because you were so cutting edge, you were doing it at the time that they were getting mixed in with the regular mm-hmm. feed, and you were getting comments on your shorts about how people didn't want, remember they used to call them TikTok, oh, TikTok videos on my... Yes, yeah. But now they're here. Now you kind of literally interact with them differently, and they appreciate that they are completely different audiences.
They also feel a little needy in some cases, like, oh, my channel's suffering. I better post some shorts to get those numbers back up. I look at an example of some channels like... And I've always been a fan of Jimmy Duresta. He's always, you know, for years, he's one of the OGs on YouTube, and he's always made long form project based videos. But now almost everything he posts is shorts. It's just like a stream of shorts, which is just clips from older videos. And it's definitely increased his subscriber numbers. But I look now when he posts the long format videos that he still does from time to time, those numbers are like super low for the size of the channel, you know? And so I look at that and I think this seems to be a pattern when you're trying to use shorts as just a method to, quote, grow your channel.
Right.
And by growing our channel, usually everybody's talking about subscribers, it seems like. That's what it seems to be the word. But for me, honestly, I think I'm in a renaissance of project videos. I think the project videos are back. And I know for the last few years, I've been saying, wow, project videos are dead. Nobody watches those because everybody wanted the top 10 tools to do the thing types of videos. But now, I've had a string of every time I post a project video, I am getting well over 100,000 views, which for mm-hmm. me for the past 5 years has been really good. I've got like 215,000, 241,000, 200,000. All of these are doing really well. And these are long videos, 20 plus minutes.
I think we're finding, and it was mentioned that like it really isn't about the length of the content. It's about what you can use this outlet for and what you can say in it. So their point was like, if there's, that's a place for bloopers. That's a place for the jokes. That's a place. And that was something that was actually said. Like, it's a good place for like the little comedic bits, which are outside of the context. And another really interesting thing that was just randomly said, but it just sat differently with me, was that shorts appeal to people who are literally looking to like cut out all of the, hey guys, mm-hmm. what are you going on? Welcome back to my channel. And I, like at first you kind of push away from it because you're like, no, wait, that's the shtick that makes the engine run. And then you're like, no, wait, if I wanted to learn how to like quickly tell which battery terminal to remove first, I literally just want to be like, so like a piece of content, which is 18 seconds, which I could reliably search for and find in the same way that I could a traditional video. But it literally be like, hey, you're stuck on the side of the road. You want to change your tire? Step one, go to your truck, like whatever. It's just it being designed to be for an audience as opposed to just your point, like acquiring more people.
Do you remember back when the shorts came out? This must have been 2019. I think it was before the pandemic is when I started experimenting with shorts. Because they just released the thing. And at the time, I had this theory that it was going to be incorporated very well into Google search. And so that search would be able to search shorts. And so that if you could provide an answer to a question in under 30 seconds or even 15 seconds, that eventually you would have that kind of evergreen content of shorts. And so it's exactly like what you're talking about. You could do those 15 seconds to explain something. But as it's worked out, I don't think that people are searching and finding answers to shorts that way. Or if they are, it's a very small amount. I think YouTube is really focused on people doing the TikTok experience with shorts, scrolling through them for entertainment rather than search. I kind of wonder if maybe if you did have a short video explaining how to do something in particular, I kind of think now you'd be better off just making a 30-second regular video, not in the vertical format even, so it doesn't get picked up in the shorts feed, but or make it a minute and 1 second or something so it doesn't show up in the shorts feed, but just as a regular video, you might be able to get more of that search traffic.
And they really seem to be separating these audiences. The algorithm, the search and the whatever algorithm for shorts is completely different than the long form content stuff that they do. They started with when you would search for like, oh, how to clean a toilet or something like that, being able to go within the how to clean your toilet video to find
the snippets.
They were already proactively pulling shorts.
You're right.
And to the point that they probably had endless data being like, yes, no one wants the, hey guys, welcome back to my channel. Like they really don't. And the chapters started being like, great, now people can proactively do it. So now if they're going to at the top of the search engine and they understand the way and the cadence at which someone searches and the way, and that's the brilliant thing. And that's why you have to double down on it being Google, because Google understands your search history, your
Right.
And to further to our conversations about AI and all of the other stuff that they've been using in the background, it's like, it knows that if Chad or Steve is going to the shorts, he doesn't like that ridiculous kind of like TikTok-y stuff. He's a guy who likes all of the creators who are making really solid tip videos or whatever, but they've learned how to not cut down their long form content into short form content, but learned how to make short form content serve the purpose it is. As opposed to like, yeah, exactly. And to go back to the early example of like someone needing to learn how to change a tire. It's like, I get your point of like, maybe that's a full length video, but it's like, I really do see the value of like within 10 seconds, if I could just get the three
absolutely
steps, that would be hugely appealing. And that should be like a, like that would be a great favorited or saved video or forwarded or stuff like that. So it just goes to show that it's like, it pushes the short form content beyond it just needing to be a joke or a little visual thing. Because AI is just going to make satisfying looking videos for us now. We don't need a creator to do that. We still need a creator. And I noticed this because I was talking to another creator at this shorts thing, and it was the same thing. They do a very traditional thing. They have a business, which is training animals, and like it is completely separate, but they have this YouTube channel, which has now attracted attention and whatnot, but it's not because of YouTube. They make videos which are literally about expressing information. You make woodworking videos and built your career off of like, genuinely, I come to you for woodworking information, not that you're trying to get me to watch your videos.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference that they're trying to work with now, because the younger folk that were sitting on the stage with millions of engagements and whatnot are like, this is great. We can literally do the same prank over and over and over again, and we get tens of millions of views and whatever. However, you also see the longevity in shorts is going to be the people who are like, oh no, I use my shorts for these little, you know, Monday uploads, which are just me 30 seconds in the morning doing like a little thing, or like, or me at least understanding more so why I'm uploading a short video as opposed to just trying to get more subscribers.
Yeah, because I think that it's hard to justify making a tip video that's really useful when, as a short, when it will be useful, but to such a small number of people that it's hard to make that worth justifying, because you're not going to get paid anything for that. And so my thought is that, you know, 3-4 years ago was that people, when they're searching for these quick answers for things, you're searching on Google proper, not YouTube. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Google has always put in those little snippets within videos, because a lot of those people, we think everybody's on YouTube, but a lot of people aren't even, you know, don't even have a YouTube account. They're right. only watching it because of something they found on Google. And so I think that that's where the search would be important. But I think they've got to figure out a way to make it have an incentive for creators to make those videos.
And I think it takes a very long time. And I think I think we congratulated them a lot in the last episode of this podcast, but look, yeah. they are actually legitimately doing a good job. I was talking to a few creators about like how we are not saying the word TikTok anymore, or this isn't like some kind of replacement of, like, I think we kind of like loosely lost the definitions of some of the terms that we were used to. And I think now people are starting to see short form content, and YouTube Shorts is now actually starting to be the thing that is, it's being referred to as even more so than TikTok, as they start to ramp this up, as they start to pay Canadian creators to have that. They started up the creator fund. It was a weird way to do it, but I also kind of have trust in them. Like, they really seem to, plus with their new membership programs, plus being able to like make this be a spot where it's like all in one for a content creator, so you don't need to go to a different platform for a different style of video. We offer it. And I see how they pushed it maybe a little too hard at the beginning, and we were all like, oh, we're just supposed to do this. And they're like, no, do it. And they're artificially inflating the numbers to really get people fired up.
And it was showing up in your regular video feed, right. which pissed off everybody. And I think you just got to, you got to ask yourself, what exactly is different from a short from a regular video? And there's only one thing of where it shows up and how you watch them scrolling, because it's not that it's vertical, you can do that on a regular video, and it's not the length, you can do that on a regular video. It's only the format in where it's shown and on that short shelf, and that it's intended to be scrolled through one after another. I almost guarantee no short is ever intended to be watched alone, just like at one thing, even though I think that's a great idea to get that one bit of information. But that's not really the point of shorts. It can't possibly be, otherwise it would just be a regular video.
Well, here's how I kind of downloaded it. I looked at it in our case, so it's only cleaning information. And one of the things that has always been a struggle for me is, if you want to do a video about a red wine stain, it's probably one of a very relatable, you know, video or whatever. It's a fairly simple process. You could probably do with this information while you're sitting at a restaurant after you recently, you know, got a red wine stain. So like the timeliness might be important for this information, but more often than not, we would never make a long form video about how to clean a red wine stain. We would probably make it be like 5 stains you might be getting that you're gonna.
Yeah.
And the issue with that is it took Google's AI and their intelligence to go through our ill-titled video to find what the people were actually looking for, and then Google put it for the people. They ended up getting all of these amazing analytics and data about the people loving the fact that, oh, now I can just find the part of the video that I want and whatever. And I can see why they're now like, if your idea for how to get rid of a red wine stain never made it to a full 4.5 minute video, and it would, of course, no one would particularly search for that, but people would particularly search for that. But the currency of it, I don't think, is a full 4.5. Hey guys, welcome to a whatever. I was challenged with, ooh, how could we show someone how to take a stain out in like not even 60 seconds or 30 seconds, but like one of the guys up there was like, I tried to do it in 18 seconds, like as short as possible, learning how to like, and that's what I think will end up pushing the creativity and the people into like thinking about, now I can't clean my space, can release a piece of content which can be found specifically for how to clean a red wine stain, not how to clean grass stains off of my thing, which might have been, you know, another keyword I would have tried or hashtag or whatever. Now we're literally getting to like, this is the core of the content. And, you know, this is the thing that it needs to fit into.
I guess my question is, why would you necessarily need to do that in the shorts format? Why wouldn't you just shoot a vertical video as a regular video? At least that way you're getting some revenue for it, or even shoot it as a horizontal video in 15, 20 seconds.
I think the value in it is showing someone how to do something in 30 seconds in a short, concise, clever way, which includes all of the other trimmings outside of the shtick, which is
using the actual shorts player. Why do you need to use that? Why not just make a 15 second regular video? What's the difference?
I mean,
if it's only for search, I would think that the regular video might do better because the shorts feed is intended for scrolling one through the other. At least that's the way I see it.
Or are these all just terms that'll just get like lost in the ether and just like mold into like just video. It doesn't matter about how short it is
At this point, it's probably you would piss people off if you made a horizontal 15 second regular video. They'd say, what, that's it?
You know what? I think to answer your question, perhaps the shorts aspect implies what you're getting from it. So again, if you're the type of, and Google really focused, or YouTube really focused on like what people actually want. That was one of the first things that they said, like, we're not like, you guys are doing a great job. Way to go. You're here for the same reason we're here. Like, give people what they want. And if someone is looking for that piece of information, how to get a red wine out of my dress shirt, I can speak with experience. There's no way you're going to do that through the traditional. However, if they're setting up this new kind of like database of short form content, which just becomes more normal. It's like, hey, if you're trying to get a tip across, like stop it with the subscribe and the like, and hey, here's a story. But we ended up becoming like that with recipe websites. If you remember way back 10 years ago, and you have to scroll through the person's whole fucking
history, why they made
family
the
history. And their grandma and stuff like that before getting to the meat and potatoes. And when you're standing
literally
in the shopping and being like, yeah, I want to make that lemon meringue pie. And you're flying through, you know, grandma, whatever, just some random stuff. I can see, and then pop-up ads and da da da. I can see how I'd be like, I'd love to just go to YouTube Shorts, type in how to make a good, what ingredients do I need for, maybe it is, maybe this is like a bridging between what we expect from AI and our phones and searchability, and it just knowing. It's like, let's stop all of this other stuff and let's just get to the point of what you're getting at. You just want to see a video.
YouTube or Google even have Shorts capability yet? If I'm searching for something, I don't think short ever comes up as a result.
Oh, like shorts in the search results?
Yeah.
I can't say.
If I'm on YouTube and asked how to change a tire, I'm not going to get a shorts video.
No, you're probably.
So I'm not even sure if YouTube, I honestly don't think YouTube is that interested in search. In shorts being used as an evergreen search product. I thought they were when they started it, but I'm not so sure now.
I think they're just trying to change how people look at this. And I also found out that you can tag your products on. So from anybody who has Shopify, and we generate a significant amount of our revenue through the Shopify and YouTube connection and being able to put merch and whatnot on the screen, you can tag them in shorts now. So you can feature a thing in a short and show whatever and be like, hey, you can go and get it now. And not that I'm trying to rationalize making content simply for, you know, making money or whatever, but it just provides another way to create content and be mindful of the diverse things that creators are looking for. They're not just looking for more subscribers or more views or something like that.
Yeah, I saw where YouTube is going to finally eliminate stories I think this month will be the last month. I'll bet you 99% of people who watch YouTube don't even know that stories exist.
And they like in and around the same time that they did shorts, and they tried to literally, and they started it with like one word and it both began with S. And knowing the difference between shorts and stories, I'm not too sure.
Well, And you know clearly that that was a response to Snapchat. When the stories came out, it was, or maybe Instagram. I don't know which came first, Instagram stories or YouTube stories, but they were just doing that thing. And now they're saying there's no reason because of the popularity of the community posts. Those are doing really well for people. I follow a couple channels who post daily on that, and it's basically Twitter for YouTube. And I really like that idea, because that's probably the best way to kind of just casually communicate with viewers, because it shows up in the regular feed, unlike stories, which is kind of buried, or even shorts, which shows up only on the short shelf now. But the community posts seem to be doing really well. I keep telling myself I want to do more of that.
Remember us talking about it on the podcast like 2 years ago? It's like, hey, this is probably a really good way to...
I guess you can set a time limit on posts too. I didn't realize that. So where they expire after a day or something, if you want to do that, if it's like just timely information.
Are we at the point where it's complete overexposure? Like, is it because people just don't truly want this much of a creator all the time? Because one of the things I noticed about the three very successful young people who were doing their thing on that panel was that almost all of them had the same, like, I have merch and I have my podcast and I have my blog, and then people can also follow me on the, like, it seems like everybody goes through and like does a speed run to get all of the stuff you need before actually getting the stuff you need to fill it with it seems like you're filling out like your resume of things that like to put things on, but that's more important than actually the logic was with one of them was like, there's always an audience, there's always people who are willing to listen to me talk, so I thought that a podcast would be a good idea. And I don't know why that just kind of sat funny with me, because I would like to think that people would start a podcast because they were like, hey.
I think from the cradle, kids today are growing up wanting to know how they can market themselves as a brand. We're all taught that we are brands ahead of individuals anymore. And maybe it's because it took me years to establish kind of my audience and the size of my channel and all of this stuff. But now, whenever, and this is probably just, I don't know, sour grapes kind of a thing, but when I see a channel that explodes in like under a year or 2 years, the first thing that comes to my mind is, how sustainable is that?
How sustainable is it? And I mean, the channels, without being specific, because I don't want to, whatever, but like one was just like a regular vlogging female channel, hey, talking about a thing, here's me going to a thing, and here's a try on of this, like just the regular stuff that you would expect, nothing overly special, but she had amazing personality and she was wonderful, so bravo. The other one were triplets who do those pranks of like, oh my gosh, I saw a person, and, oh, I saw the same person. So that's a great example, because it's like, there's your shtick is your triplets and you know, kind of do these prank videos. And then the other one was like a gaming kind of comedy channel, but high energy, like younger person, Minecraft type channel. And all of them had the full spectrum of everything. All of them basically rather new channels, comparatively speaking, at least to us. And all of them starting with like, oh my gosh, we uploaded a bunch of it. And then this one video went in like a lot of the success in like 7 million subscribers based upon like literally 4 or 5 videos. And then their point being like, and as soon as those 4 videos shot to the moon, it seemed like all of our other content started doing the thing. And they brought up an interesting point saying like, hey, we can just do our pranks without even saying words, so we appeal to a global market. And right now it's a very hot thing to have like, oh, it's a triplets and they're doing a kind of a whatever. But to your point, what's this like? We have a bunch of creators here who are asking questions about sustainability. How do you like, what do you, and they almost are up there being like, we're not too sure ourselves.
We just don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know. But I'm comfortable that with that I don't know. So that's why I'm also not running off and starting another podcast. Well, I did start a podcast, but I didn't start a podcast because I was like, let's start a podcast to get a new thing. And it just seems now that it's like, it has to go. It's like the complete package. You get the full bundle. You do the whole thing. To your point, I remember when they first started talking about it in the mid-90s. You're a brand. Treat yourself as a brand. That's how you stand out in this world. Brand yourself. Give yourself a little logo and a tagline.
Yeah. Hey, how was your golf? I saw you went golfing last week.
Pinehurst. I don't know if you're much of a golf person.
But I don't know anything about golf other than Tiger Woods.
There you go. Tiger Woods is an amazing golfer. He's golfed at
And
golf
I know
course.
The George Carlin bit he did on golf years ago.
Just pick it up and put it in your pocket, you dumb motherfucker. Lucky you found it in the first place.
Call it a racist sport. And oh, he went on about golf.
A little tiny ball.
So tell me about this trip.
Well, it was the first time I have done a few things. Like it was like a guy's trip.
Oh, let me interject here. One thing. I wrote a note here because I wanted to say this, that I saw one of your reels on this and mind-blowing. You're left-handed. I never knew this, and I'm watching you golf left hand. Like, whoa, that is so painful for me to watch that.
I'm right-handed.
No.
And do you know what I found out while I was there? So Pinehurst is in North Carolina, for people who don't golf or care. It is one of the greatest courses in the world, definitely one of the greatest courses in North America. They've played U.S. Opens there, and it's this beautiful, amazing kind of like a sacred place for like golf people to go to. Why was I saying this?
It's like Steve? Pebble Beach or something on that.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what? That's a very good example. And there's a few holes which are like just notable, and it was by a famous designer and all of the rest. So it was the first time that I had done a guy's trip. So it was me and two guy friends, and we got a condo and we're just kind of guys for 4 days. I don't know how that sounds. That probably sounds
bro
pretty
golf.
Bad. It was kind of bro golf, but it was nice to get into that mindset. I don't like, especially after like with Riley, it's been years of dad mode and whatnot. So like,
you got to do that. Yeah.
It was fun.
But so now you learned to golf left-handed? This is what I'm confused on.
That's what I was getting at. When I was there, it's in North Carolina. It was an American person, and they came up to, all of us were Canadian who were there, and the guy, one of the marshals, they're called, and people that go around and make sure people keep up the pace of play and stuff like that. And he came and he walked over to us as we were walking off of a green, and he goes, "What part of Canada are you from?" We're like, "What?" He's like, "What part of Canada are you from?" I'm like, "Well, we're from Toronto," and da da da. And he goes, "You want to know how I knew?" He goes, "Because 2/3 of you are left-handed golfers. And I heard a stat once that 75% of all left-handed golf clubs are sold in Canada."
What?
And I'm like, what? And I'm there with my friend Luke.
Yeah.
Well, Fred, Luke is a part of the Clean My, like Luke is Clean My Space as much as I'm Clean My Space. So I'm there with Luke, and Luke's a hardcore golfer, and he knows his stuff. But like even that like caught him. Like, really? Why would Canadians be so? You want to know why? Because of hockey. Just everybody shoots left-handed in hockey. Just I don't
is
know
that
why.
Right?
It just feels very natural. Even people
would you swing a baseball bat left-handed too?
Yeah.
Really?
And it's the same reason, because it feel like with a hockey stick, it's one hand up top, one hand about 3/4 of the way down, and you slap it, and using.
Oh, I see. Because your right hand is up.
Seems a lot better. It's just whatever. It seems more comfortable for me. And because I guess a lot of Canadians play hockey, or more so, I guess the point was, because we're more apt to have a hockey stick put in our hands to choose the direction of a thing. And because in hockey, it's not as relative. Yeah. And that's why when I got into golf, I'm like, I'm one of the only people that are like, not everybody's left-handed, but I am right-handed. Like, I don't get it. And then as time's gone on, I have realized that there are more and more left-handed people. And I've realized that it it really is a Canadian thing. So I started paying attention. It's like, yeah, a lot of left-handed golfers are from Canada. So
oh
there you
my
go.
God. I don't think I could swing a golf club. I couldn't, I can't swing anything left-handed. I cannot do, my left arm is just useless.
It's I just, see it's Luke do it right-handed and I'm like, what the, how do you manage to do that? Isn't it crazy how you can just do one thing with one hand and so then you throw a ball with your other hand?
Yeah. How was the golf game, though? How'd you do?
And amazing. My goal was to break 100. It doesn't sound very spectacular. It is for me, especially on a course like that.
Is it a difficult course?
It is. Okay. It's incredible. Like they, yeah. I mean, we play from like the amateur tees, the, you know, the tees that are really close up, and then they have tee boxes, which are really further back.
So yeah, I learned that those were like for women. That's really sexist, but that's
well,
probably
they were.
Not
they were called,
the case anymore.
It used to be called the women's tee. I mean, they still are called they? Women's tee in a lot of, yeah, in a lot of places, just because, I mean, it was just acknowledged. That's where the women.
So
women
you did the girls' tees.
No, they don't call them that anymore. And we did the second back ones.
Oh, well, there
they
you
had
go.
Five different ones, go. So we were not playing the first ones, but we did play the second ones. Professionals would play from the back ones, and there's like you look at the what they have to do, and they're like, "There's no way I'm doing
that."
That's
a long distance back.
It was difficult. It was beautiful. I was there with my bros and we just, it was such a good experience. And I ended up golfing fairly well because my head wasn't in a million places. And for the first time, I wasn't golfing and being like, when I get back home, I have to post that short and do that. Yeah. And that really plays with you. It's really neat to play golf and just be like, hey, after this, you know, there's nothing. I just literally go back to a hotel or we go get
What is it you enjoy about golf? Is it the walking, the casual, the sport?
Silence.
Oh, really?
It's you. It's only you versus you. I've always loved that about golf. You're only playing against yourself. You're playing the course. You're truly playing the course. You are in the middle of nowhere. There's holes in golf where you'll just stand and look around and everything is quiet. You realize that even the people that you're with, like the, you know, if you're with two or three other people, like they're, one's over there in the sand bunker, one's still over there. And like, there'll just be moments where you just hear birds, you feel the sun in your face and you're just like, this is a sport. And then when you get down to it, you're like, okay, now I need to figure out the angle. So unlike tennis or basketball or I don't know, whatever, a whole bunch of other sports, I don't know. It checks all the sport boxes, but and to George Carlin's point, the absurdity of sending a ball an inch big into a hole, which is, I think, 3 inches big.
From like a mile away.
550 yards away. And you only have this crooked stick, as Robin Williams, and you just hit it. And there's grass and sand. And I love just the absurdity of like that being the goal and it just being up to you. It doesn't matter about your players. It doesn't matter if someone else is going to screw you up because it is just you.
Do you get frustrated though? Because I've only golfed like 3 times in my life and I didn't like it. It was just, to me, it was just so frustrating.
It's the game I love to hate. I hate it and I love it at the same time, but I love it so much that I don't mind hating it. And I'm also well past the like, trying to look cool. I really enjoy golf just for the sake of golfing.
Well, so your drive looked cool. I mean, it looked like I'm like swinging wildly, like swashing a machete or something. And you know, it looks like I take like a baseball swing. I remember doing that. And they're like, no, you're not doing this right. And I was really corrected every time I tried to drive.
So when we get together at VidCon, we're going to go out and we'll hit a driving range. You guys have Top Golf over there in California, I think. So we can go and hit some balls if you want. No, you're shaking your head no already. So we won't do that.
A driving range, I think I could handle. No, I have done the driving range before, getting a bucket of balls and hitting those.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I like the miniature golf is fun because everybody sucks at that. You can't be good at miniature golf because there's so many obstacles and things you gotta try to make it through the windmill, you know. The only thing you can do is hope that the guy you're playing with sucks more.
That's all I care about. The most So Pinehurst is in North Carolina. They have 10 golf courses. The golf course, which is the most famous where they play all the US Opens and is called Pinehurst number 2. Deuce. It's very famous just for known as being Pinehurst number 2. So we decided to play Pinehurst number 2. There was 3 of us. Normally golfers are in foursomes. Usually if you go as a pair, you're often paired up with 2 other people, but sometimes, most of the time, if you go as a 3, very rarely will you just get the odd guy to like randomly come.
That would be awkward.
You know what? In golfing circles, it's not as awkward as really? It sounds. And it's a great way to meet new people.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's another thing I really like about golf, to add to my growing list of things I like about golf. Just really, you'll meet other people and they end up being the same way. Oh, please don't judge me for my golf. And then you shank a few balls and then all of a sudden you're just like, great, this is the person I'm playing with. However, we're not just playing at our regular course here in Toronto. We are playing at Pinehurst number 2 in North Carolina. And we go up to the starter. It's this little house and you go up to it and you're like, hi, this is our thing. We're off at 11:30. And it's like, okay, yeah. No, the three of you and all three of you are here. And it's check, check, check. Okay, we've paired you up with someone. There's a single today, but don't worry. He's a member.
What does that mean? I mean, I understand what a member is, but how is
he
that
He is
really?
A member of Pinehurst, which means we paid an astronomical amount of money to stay on the property in order to pay an astronomical money to play the course. And he just, he's there. Like he, that's his golf course. That's where he plays every single day. Plays every single day. He knows the course inside and out. He's a member. He spends hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to play Pinehurst.
So what were you thinking? Like, oh, this guy's going to judge us or something?
Right. Because Luke's a good golfer. Luke will look good. I can hold it together long enough to at least look like I kind of know what I'm doing. And we're with someone else who can kind of do the same thing. But when you're at such an intimidating place and then on the first hole, everybody's watching you, right? Everybody's watching you. So you tee up, and much like my earlier point of loving golf because it's all you, that's when you realize it's all on you. Like, it's the most difficult thing in the world. Like, it's like standing up in front of a crowd with a microphone and being like, okay, entertain
us. Did you get this feeling when this member was watching you? Like, oh God, he's judging my...
So we got introduced to him. His name was Jim. He had a cigar and he looked like a very wealthy American from that area, if that makes sense. He literally kind of fit the mold of what he was. Wonderful, very polite and southern hospitality and funny and all of the rest. He ended up being a great guy. However, just the intimidation of being like, oh my gosh, this is a dude who's just like whatever. Anyways, he ended up being a great guy, ended up not being an issue at all. He's very used to playing at a course where a bunch of people just come and like are completely overwhelmed and all of the rest. However, standing there at the first tee, standing over your ball and, you know, seeing 500 yards in front of you, this little tiny flag, having the best part about golf is everybody's quiet when you're swinging. So everybody stops and looks at you. And even the marshals in their car, they all stop and they look at you. Everybody's quiet. And then I shanked my ball. I literally I shanked it. And for those who don't know what a shank is, it literally went 14 feet to the right.
Oh.
And I picked up my tee and I turned around. I looked right at Jim and I'm like, I will always remember my first drive at Pinehurst.
that's a good response to that.
But I broke 100 and that's all I wanted to do.
Wow. So what's like how much does it cost? Because I've heard like Pebble Beach is like a crazy expensive to golf, a round of golf there.
And there's a lot of courses that you can't even just play because they're just completely private and you'll always
I think that's the way, like Pebble Beach is my only thing because I've driven through there a number of times and it's just gorgeous. And you got the cliffs going into the Pacific Ocean and everything. But yeah, I've heard it's just crazy expensive.
Incredibly expensive. Greens fees are about $500
for one
game.
A lot.
One
for,
round,
4 hour game.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, obviously,
do you get any perks with that? Did they give you like a donut or something?
You got teas.
You got a free tea. Well, there you go.
They gave us a sleeve of balls, which said Pinehurst on them, which I promptly lost within the first four holes. And they were pretty good. They were actually good. But the one thing I will say, over all of that and beyond golf, Southern hospitality is real. I absolutely loved almost every single person I ran into at North Carolina. It was a really, really, really nice place. So if anybody from North Carolina is listening, you live in a beautiful spot.
Tobacco country.
Tobacco Road was one of the golf courses that we played.
I think people still smoke there. It's like Europe.
I mean, well, it's in that Virginia area. So they have that great land for growing that good tobacco. Did you smoked, didn't you? You were a smoker, right? Yeah, long time. How long did you smoke for?
Oh, I started when I was like 14 or 15 because I thought it was so cool, you know.
Remember? I stole my brother's cigarettes and I was like, I was 13 years old.
I started with a friend of mine. I'll never forget it because he was just about the same age and he had a pack of menthols. And I remember we were in the basement at his parents' house. House and they had a pool table and he and I just sat there like I was just puffing on those menthols. I didn't inhale them or anything, but that
you
was
just held them in your mouth
sucking on the and I remember that. And then eventually I would start to like inhale a little bit and I kind of got a buzz off of it and then it kind of made me sick. And then next thing I know, and I remember this other friend of mine who had been smoking. He was a little older. He'd been smoking for a while. And I remember him saying one time, so are you hooked yet? Are you hooked yet? He was like wanting me to get addicted to this thing. And I'm like, nah, I'm just like, you know.
Yeah. It's like, do you get an affiliate cut from Philip Morris or something like that? If you like hook people into smoking.
That is the most addictive. Oh my God.
I'm
horrible.
I thought it was so silly when they went through and made, I mean, they did here in Canada. They stopped grocery stores from having what they called cigarette walls.
Yeah, I remember those.
And now they put covers over them and now they just put them in like under the cupboards.
You gotta
like
ask
in like
for them or something.
And you gotta ask for them. They don't really put signs anywhere. And like, yeah, I mean, we grew up in the time where it was Marble Man and the camel. Did the camel
Joe
have
Cool.
a name?
Joe Cool.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And he looked like a big dick or something. Cause remember his face was very phallic.
It was very phallic looking. Mm-hmm. And that's the... It's the least of your worries if you're sucking back those camels. Yeah. And then to your point, you still end up getting that cool little head hit, but then the sickness goes away. Yeah. You just stop feeling sick about it. And then you just like, I can't describe the feeling of what it was like to just on a regular day when you were, you know, you hadn't had a cigarette after like a flight or something like that. And then like just getting out and firing up a cigarette and inhaling that first.
And I think everybody who used to smoke will say the same thing. I could still, right now, I could smoke a cigarette and I can imagine that
exactly
sensation.
What that feeling is and how it feels in your throat. I mean, it's horrible. It's actually what
I remember puffing on somebody's cigarette. This is probably 10 years ago or something. Cause I was kind of curious. I'm like, let me try that. I haven't smoked in a long time. And I just remember breathing it in and feeling that sensation. But the thing I noticed the most was how horrible it tasted. It to me at that then it tasted just like, God, how did I like this?
You hit all those gasoline and diesel notes and like the chemically metallic taste in it.
Oh, there's like 1,000 chemicals in a cigarette. It's horrible.
The other thing is I did the same thing. I don't even know how. It was a long time ago. And I just instantly started hacking and coughing. And I was like, isn't that crazy how like that small drag instantly made my body just be like, what the fuck is this? Like, get this out of here immediately. I'm just hacking and spitting and da-da-da. I'm like, wow, I can see how I would like numb myself to this again. But like, isn't it fitting that once you step away from it and then you try it again, you're like, holy crap, I can't believe I like numbed myself to this coughing.
Yeah. I've heard that you can, if you stop smoking, your lungs will start to repair themselves. I don't know if they'll ever go back to their complete pristine pink versions of themselves, but I think that they will repair. So I'm hoping that's the case, because it's one thing I always kind of worry. It's like, God, did I just fuck up my life from smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, but you've really made up for it.
You've
done a complete so you know, you really have. What cigarette
Marlboro
Reds. And which one do you miss the most? Which, like, the first cigarette in the morning, the cigarette driving home late at night.
Oh, wow. Probably with drinking beer.
Oh, it's a good one, eh? When you go to the bar and you're like,
those two were inseparable. Drinking and smoking just kind of went together. But definitely that first cigarette of the morning was just
First cigarette of the day or a cigarette after a good meal, like a good big meal.
Yeah.
Back when you used to, the waiter would just take your thing and
people
light up
still
at a table.
Be eating and you'd still be smoking there.
Yeah, yeah. They're having dessert and you're just blowing your marble in their face.
I know. Oh, that was so horrible. I'm so glad glad I don't smoke anymore. But I don't see people smoking anymore. And it may be geographical. I don't know, because it's just impossible to smoke in California. And you got to hide yourself away and somewhere. I don't know where they smoke.
Like, we knew it was going to be one of those things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we just knew, like, it just had that, like, yeah, I'm sure you could let blood by using leeches, but, like, let's not use leeches to, do you know what I mean? Like, I get that you get a little high off of this thing, but, like, look at all of this other stuff. And that became really crippling. And again, to your point, when as soon as you lose the coolness of it, you have a bunch of kids who would be like, what the heck are you doing? That's so unhealthy for you. Because they would never register the, his name was Joe Cool.
Joe Cool. And see, that was the thing, is because you have to start smoking when you're a teen or a kid, because the number of people who pick up smoking after the age of like 22 or something is just almost zero. Nobody starts smoking as an adult.
Smoking. Yeah.
Nobody's like 45 and going, you know what would be good? Yeah. Smoking.
I'm going to get into smoking. Unless you're like intentionally trying to like change your life. Fine. Like, I'm not trying to talk you out of smoking.
I'm trying to change my life for the worst.
But yeah, no, to that point, there's other vices which are available, which are way less harmful. It reeks. Well, there you go.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening.
Wow, that ground to a halt.